Dear Plugged In. You in on this? Toyota's versatile SUVs roll up their sleeves and take on tough jobs, dress up for a night out, or haul your family and friends with their spacious interiors. And they're available with some real sweet tech. Want a hybrid SUV? Oh yeah, they got those too. All with a slew of standard features so you won't break the bank. Get the juice at Toyota.com, folks.
Visit your Front Range Toyota stores today. Toyota, let's go places.
Welcome into the DNVR Rockies podcast brought to you by Strava Craft Coffee. Remember to use the promo code DNVR25. You'll get 25% off your entire purchase of that CBD-infused, deliciously rich, and potentially life-altering Strava Craft Coffee. I'm your host, Drew Kreisman. I'm the managing editor of DNVR Rockies. With me, as always, is beat writer Patrick Lyons. And on this one, we wrap up a whole lot of stuff. We're wrapping up the series. We're wrapping up the road trip. We'll have some final thoughts on the trade deadline, though, obviously, as you all well know, nothing happened, and we mostly hashed all of that out, but still, we'll put a bow on everything. Again, it's what we're doing today. We're wrapping everything up. We're going to start here with this four-game set against the San Diego Padres that the Rockies do manage to split, and really, again, the bigger picture there that somehow, despite today's awful loss, that basically as soon as Austin Gomber gave up four runs in the first inning, the ball game was over. The Rockies bullpen are not going to keep you in a game like that. They're just not. Give you a chance to make the comeback. But four road wins. We put them at 2.5. We put the over-under at 2.5 going into this road trip, Patrick. It didn't look pretty, but they were able to best that and comfortably getting four of them. Had a chance at a few others even. Obviously, the best they've looked on the road all season. The bar was set pretty low there, but they will, well, at worst now, I guess, with 13 road wins, they can only tie but not have sole ownership of the worst ever road record in baseball. But there's 2 months to play. I think you can comfortably, well, no, don't say it out loud. Actually, don't. They could go over on the road the rest of the year. So I will stop that sentence and throw it to my partner and simply say, Patrick, that they played much better baseball on the road.
They played very competitive baseball all week long, besides a game here or there where they kind of got blown out. Man. But nevertheless, they will not have the worst road record. They may still be one of the worst road teams of all time, but they won't have the worst road record of all time. So
let's go.
So we had a couple caveats in there, and we'll figure it out when we get there. But I love the idea of the Rockies as spoilers, and I know that can be a bit trite at times, and some people, you know, don't like that tag. And obviously, you want to play your best regardless of who you're against and how late in the season it is and how much of a transition year it is and how you might not be really competing for just about anything. But I feel like it's really sweet. It's not bittersweet. It's just sweet. The season might be bittersweet.
Sure.
But this series and what they've been able to do to the Padres has been sweet, because the way the Padres came into Coors Field in 2019 in the middle of June, and that four-game set that was back and forth, and they scored 60-some runs, 140 hits. I forget exactly what the numbers were. I remember being at the stadium until the sun went down, because there was so much.
And just thinking, no, absolutely. This is a simulation.
Ray Davis,
the Matrix, I'm going to reboot.
Blowing everything.
This isn't happening. This isn't real. I remember that so vividly.
It was bad. Buddy slamming the door, you know, in the press room. The only time he's ever showed any emotion of any kind. And that was the end. And that's, you know, there's a whole conversation to have about what the Rockies have been as an organization or what they've put on the field since then or their win-loss record. But the Padres totally derailed, and they didn't close the Rockies window. But you go back and you look and go, well, 2019, they didn't make the playoffs. They weren't very good after that point. In 2020, they kind of were pretenders for the first couple weeks, and look at what their record is. And Arenado gets traded. We see what they are now. But at that time, the Rockies window was still open. They still had consecutive postseasons. They weren't in a bad spot.
Right.
But after that series, 100%. It was kind of over. And for the Rockies to now to be returning the favor, I don't think the Padres season is over by any stretch of the imagination, but it is keeping them out from first place in the West against the Giants. We're seeing the Reds now playing really hot. They did incredibly well against the Mets. And you go, well, maybe the Reds can somehow sneak up and get that final wild card spot from the Padres. And again, that's something that if you're a Rockies fan is just sweet for you.
Yeah.
Enjoy it.
If they end up looking back at either going out in one game in the wild card or actually missing the wild card game and not even going to the postseason with this team, which and nobody roots for this, and this is horrible, but just a reminder that one of the first things that happened in the series, Fernando Tatis Jr. going down, and that's really scary. What a horrible couple of days of news for Padres fans. 48 hours ago, you thought you were getting Max Scherzer. Now he's going to the Dodgers along with Trey Turner. Oh, and Fernando Tatis Jr. is hurt, and some of these other things are starting to fall, and you're losing to the friggin' Rockies, and it's just not where you want to be right now if you're a Padres fan, which is exactly how it felt. I love that you bring up this symmetry, and I agree. It was one of those, like anything in life, there's never one reason why something falls apart, right, and totally goes the wrong way when there was so much potential there. But I think if you could, like, pinpoint the five stars of why it fell apart, and like biggest one of that star being the poisoning of the relationship with Nolan Arenado. Somewhere on there is the undervaluing of DJ LeMahieu. You have the abandoning of the pitch and defense first. I made that one word, didn't I? Strategy. By going out and getting guys like Ian Desmond and Daniel Murphy, not fully committing to what the rest of your team was built to do. And then you have these individual moments. Not doing anything at the 2019 deadline is definitely on there, and that was directly precipitated by that series against San Diego, where I earnestly believe if they win those games and sweep them the way they should have, the way they were in perfect position to do, the Rockies would have bought at that deadline. Marcus Stroman was a name we know they were in on, who was sold that deadline, who could have made a big impact. Remember, he had a couple of years left on that deal. And is that somebody who convinces Nolan, oh, they do mean it, they are building around me? That was part of the big problem. Look, they got how many things could have changed? So you're 100% right. But that's also life. You can't go back and undo all those things. That's just the way it went down. But you're right. For this year right now to go really sticking it to the San Diego Padres has got to feel pretty good. So
I don't know how much credit goes to Bud Black. Like, again, we're not on the inside of the clubhouse. Yeah. No one is, unless you're a player on the team, to know how well he pushes those buttons of those players to remind them. But this is the exact same thing happened with Milwaukee, where in 2018, Milwaukee goes and maybe embarrasses is too far of a stretch, but sweeps the Rockies, and it's just no competition right there. Knocks them out right away after the big wild card win in Chicago. And then Rockies immediately return the favor in at the end of 2019 when they've got nothing to play for. And they say, okay, we're going to whoop your butt so that you don't win the NL Central. And then they get knocked out in the wild card game by the Nationals. And so same thing in 2019, the Padres were on the come up somewhat, but they were nowhere near a postseason appearance. The Rockies, I think going into that series, I think they still had control of one of the two wild cards, if I'm not mistaken. So they were obviously there. And so I would need to take a step back and think, who in the last two seasons have really gotten under the Rockies' skin and really, messed with them? You have to look at the standings at different points. Who was it last year in 2020 that maybe helped derail the Rockies' season? Because Bud Black knows.
Last year was
Bud Black knows that, and that team will have their comeuppance in no time soon, right? Soon.
I love this theory too, because it was a great series for Buddy. He had the moment, I think, of the series with Armand Marquez with the bases loaded in the sixth, and that one you know, about to slip away from him. And he basically went out there, lit a fire under Marquez, lit a fire under the home plate umpire, and ended up earning a call on a pitch that was not a strike to end that inning for a strikeout. And because so many calls have been going the other way, he was very demonstrative about it. He was making a point for everybody. And it really, like, it doesn't always work out that way when you do that as a manager. There's a chance you make that much of a thing in a big moment like that, and then a guy pipes one and it's grand slam and goes completely the other way. You know, oops.
But he responded well, and that right there is a reminder of what the Rockies have to play for in the second half. Maybe let me rephrase that. The Rockies don't have anything to play for in the second half, but each player on that team, or each even unit, right? Each, you might even look and just say, hey, the guys up the middle, Rodgers and Story, or even if there's a different kind of combination between second and shortstop, whatever it is, the outfield trio, or the bullpen, each of those individual guys or individual groups, if you will, have a lot to play for. Buddy has a lot to manage for with only 1 year left on his deal coming up next season. So you see that. And even still, he understands, like, these guys are going to be his living legacy, right? Like, Herman Marquez, he might not be around for him next year. I mean, we don't know the future. We just don't know. But what we do know is Herman Marquez has a lot more years left in MLB. And all the success he has for the rest of his career, to a certain degree, can be attributed to Bud Black. And that's one of the things Bud Black every day, I'm sure, wakes up and thinks about. He doesn't have to think hard because he's one of the best at what he does. And he's like, this guy's going to go on. I want him to go on and win a Cy Young. I want him to be a multi-time all-star, to start in an all-star game. And so what I do here in the second half in August and in September of a lost season that might not mean anything to the organization as a whole, it can mean something to this guy. And because of that, it means the world to me.
Right.
And you saw that there today.
Yeah. And I just, I love that about him. And that's one of those things in sports that I think, cause you know, like you were just saying, and it's not just, it's every team. Anytime you impart wisdom on anybody, there's a chance they could use it to come back and beat you. That's professional sports. They're going to be on the other side one day. That's just how it goes. And so I always appreciate people who are just so giving with their
consistent.
And especially, you're right, he has a special relationship with these young pitchers, and it's really cool to watch in moments like that. All right. Also, let's do this. Let's toast our Breck Brews on the day. Tap got a little toe
tap pack.
We haven't seen him a little bit the last couple of days.
Didn't get a Mac pack either. We didn't get a Mac pack, at least not in the starting lineup.
But you can get a tap pack of Breck Brews at your local King Supers or liquor store. You can get a bigger one, of course, down at the DNVR bar for being a member of the family. Highly recommend it. Subscribe today. You'll get access to all the written content. You'll get regular discounts on all kinds of cool stuff from the merch store. You get a free shirt from the DNVR locker. You get to be a part of the coolest community of sports fans anywhere. I said it, and I'm not taking it back. I saw y'all. I'm riding high last night. We had the grand opening 2.0 down at the DNVR bar. Met so many cool people. If I start rattling off names, I'm going to feel bad about anybody that I left out.
If you met Drew, you are cool.
Like, straight up, I stood and talked to so many people for a really long time about baseball or the bar or DNVR or just life or whatever. We got into talking about all kinds of fun and interesting things, and some people that have been listening from back in the BSN days and like the long timers, man. It was wild. So it really was. If you ever doubt that it's, when we're talking about become a member of the family, and I know they say that at like Olive Garden or
whatever. I was going to say Olive Garden. I was like, are you saying Olive Garden? You are saying Olive Garden.
But
they don't have merchandise. So you can't go around with your Olive Garden cap or Olive Garden shirt.
If you had been there last night, and if you can get down anytime and come and hang out with everybody, you'll see exactly what we mean. So do become a member of the family today. And of course, one of the things, you know, that you get hooked up with if you're a member of the family is all kinds of awesome sponsors. They're giving you deals, including our friend at DraftKings. DraftKings deals basically amount to them giving you free money. Once you've signed up, bet on a couple of things, low dollar amounts. I've basically figured out how to turn the entire thing into, at the absolute worst, a zero sum game that makes my enjoyment of sports that much more fun. I didn't need help enjoying sports, but some of the sports that I don't know as well, or maybe I need to get in. It's been phenomenal during the Olympics.
Olympics has been huge, right?
You're just like, what are they supposed to do? Oh, okay. It like gives you a baseline for what's good. Right. And you know, if they beat that, then the athlete has done well. And if not,
it also gives you an excuse to watch it, where if your significant other is like, hey, why are you? I'm like, come on. Bobich has got the big one going on. And I don't know if Yang Zi is going to get it done. I mean, they're 1-2, Bobich and Yang Zi. And you're like, how do you know? Oh, you all right? You're invested in this. Go ahead and watch. And when it's over, then we'll go have some dinner. But until then, I need to watch my Olympics. I got some money riding on it here on DraftKings.
It's so much fun. So do hop on there today. And like I said, they're regularly giving you promotions that amount to free bets on anything and everything you want. Right now, this has got to be their best one of all time. This is just free money. So if you've been hesitant, if you've never been sure about it, now's the time to get in, because you're going to end up with $100 worth of free credits to do whatever you want with. And you can bet small dollar amounts all over the place and kind of get used to it and feel like it's, you know, low risk, because you're going to land on this promo. Download the top rated DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use promo code DNVR when you sign up to turn $1 into $100 in free credits if America wins a medal. That's code DNVR to turn $1 into $100 in free credits. For a limited time only at DraftKings Sportsbook. Must be 21 or older. Colorado only. New customers only. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. If you have a gambling problem, call 1-800-522-4700. All right, Patrick. One of the people we've definitely got to be toasting our Breck brews and potentially placing some future bets on, the DraftKings Sportsbook app recently. I think the biggest breath of fresh air stories we've talked about a lot, and he continues to be so. Brendan Rodgers extends his hit streak to 9 games in this one. Was hitting .333 with 4 homers on the road trip coming into the game, and then goes 1-for-3 with a walk. Now hitting .270 on the year, but that OPS, because he's been slugging a little bit more lately, especially with Blackman. He's been hitting well, but not quite as much slugging. So the OPS of .807. Highest of any starter in the lineup today over Blackman's story. Nice, nice work, especially on the road from Brendan Rodgers.
Yeah, and even if you just go back and look at his last 7 games, in which we're all on the road, yeah, he has an OPS over 1,000, right? I think since June 5th, he was tied for the most at when he had that home run yesterday, his 9th. I think Diaz then ended up getting one, so now he's back in the lead, but he's doing absolutely everything you were hoping that he would be. And honestly, I think he's doing everything beyond what I would have personally hoped for, because you look at the trials and tribulations he's had the last 2 years, it's mainly just been injuries. It's just been, you know, just staying healthy and on the field. Maybe some worry about the numbers that he put up in Albuquerque. You know, they were okay, but nevertheless, you go, it's a 22-year-old kid. You can kind of look past that a little bit. Not everyone's going to go out and have a 1,200 OPS in the Pacific Coast League. So you can look past that and you go, just have some health, get that under your belt, kind of figure it out. It's the same thing with like Ryan McMahon. Get some starts. You know, you don't have to be a rookie of the year from the get-go. Right. And he's been healthy. And you go, that's great. And he's been good at times. And that's great.
Yeah.
And he's been great at times, which is, again, beyond anything a lot of fans probably could have hoped for. And it really might signal a very quick changing of the guard when you think about, like, whose team is this? This year it was, you know, Story and Blackman's. And very quickly, it could be all Brendan Rodgers' team. I don't think it's just going to be him. You know, Blackman still has 2 more years left, one of which is a player's option.
Next year, it's Rodgers and McMahon's team.
McMahon is still kind of, you know, trying to figure out where his ceiling is. So that's where I think it may just be Rodgers. But I more likely, yeah, absolutely.
I think that's that where capacity, McMahon, I think they're a dual-headed, because Rodgers is going to be, I think you're right. I was talking to our guy Adam Maras at the grand opening last night, and he was saying, you know, who's that next guy? He's like, I'm in on Tapper.
Who the hell's on the Rockies? That's what he said. Let's face it.
Who plays for the team again? No,
who the hell's on the Rockies?
He was saying, you know, do you think one of these guys can become a star? And I was saying, I really do still think, and I've never wavered from that, despite the terrible start of it. And you know, it's a long shot to call that anybody's going to be a star in Major League Baseball when they're a prospect. It's just the recognition that the potential is there.
And the star for a Rockies player, right? Like, we know the Rockies have had their fair share of stars.
Sure.
But a lot of other teams haven't necessarily been able to do that. They're like right. These like almost one-off players. And I'm not just making disparaging remarks about the Rockies. It's just you can't guarantee, oh, yeah, we've got our next superstar. The Rockies have just been fortunate the way they've been able to develop that one superstar, or, you know, bring in Larry Walker and he developed because he wasn't an all-star before he was a Rocky. Right. So, I mean, you look at that and you go, still, the odds are against Rodgers doing what he's doing right now.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, you know, I think he's still got every opportunity to max this thing out a whole lot more. And like Goody was saying on our show the other day, some of it's, you know, in the stats that you can see and you go, okay, this is so much better. And some of it's just the way the certain home runs, when you're hitting laser line drives to right center field off of a really good lefty and it's getting out in 3.5 seconds and you didn't really look like you came out of your swing to get it. You know, some guys every once in a while they'll go all out and they'll hit a monster jam and you're like, all right. And the players blast each other.
San Diego. In San Diego, folks.
The marine layer. And so and players, I've heard players ask each other this in the clubhouse after a game. Oh, I miss those days. It's been so long. I've heard players go, do you lean on it? Do you lean? And what they're asking there, right, is basically, did you sell out? Did you go out of what is your normal swing, take a full guess, and try to hit a home run? And for some guys, there's nothing necessarily wrong with doing that. There's actually a cerebral, like sometimes it's a good thing to do. But Brendan Rodgers' home runs on this road trip were not that. It's just the natural course of his swing. He just took the bat to meet the ball at home run that just, it just, there were two of them, that one in LA and one in San Diego, that I've been thinking about all week.
And that's almost what, and I love how you describe that too, because that's what you talk about for young players who are hitting a lot of doubles in the minors. And you go, that's okay. Those doubles will turn into home runs. They're not going to turn into 500 foot shots or 475 or 450, but they will turn into home runs where, like you said, just gets over the wall. That's all you need. Or even a little bit more so in left center in San Diego. And you go, that was that double I saw back in Lancaster when he was 20, 21 years old. And you go, man, I don't know if the power is there. No, that the power is there. That's what produces that kind of a double.
Right.
And that's the exact same thing that 3 years later, when you get the big boy strength, it produces home runs like that on the road.
Yep. And there's more in there. Speaking of the, as somebody put it, who is it? Brandon here in the comments put it with the mini home run derby. For the 9-4 game. But really for this entire road trip. So as he's talking about in that game, McMahon obviously had the big grand slam in the first inning that, so four runs in the first. Rockies did it first. But still, that's a big one. And we know he'd been gone about a month. I think it's 99 at-bats between. Wow. I'm not sure if his plate appearances or at-bats. So it might be a slightly different number. But
that would be a good deep dive to look like how many guys, what's the most home runs a player has hit in a season. Just look at Rockies guys.
And then gone.
But has gone 99 straight without a homer.
Yeah.
Ooh, that's going to be hard to do and get over like the 20 homer mark, you know? So, but that goes to show you how good McMahon was, you know, that opening month plus of the season. And again, that's one of those things you got to work out. You know, you made it to the majors, you get your starting spot, you're an everyday regular, but you just want to be more consistent where you don't have those kind of slumps. I mean, you know, not to rake anyone over the coals, but Nolan Arenado in 2019, if we're going to go back and talk about that Padres series, you know, him going quiet for stretches. Yeah. I think even 2018 too, where you look and go, man, if he hadn't, and again, still a big gap between Nolan Arenado and Ryan McMahon. Right. We know this, but still that's part of why Nolan, when he did come back in 2019, he cleaned it up a little bit. He said, I lost some of that baby fat, you know, for 20 for a guy in his late 20s to say that. Yeah. Right. Like I dropped about 15 pounds and just taking things more seriously so that I don't go quiet when my team needs me. So that I can, if I can't necessarily throw them on my back, I can still contribute. I can still do a lot of the little things well that end up producing wins for the team. And so, you know, that's something that McMahon's going to be working on, you know, this entire offseason and for the remainder of this year. There's not very many guys that don't have certain slumps, maybe not the 0-for-99 on the homers, but still the best of the best don't really have those kind of downturns. And that's, you know, that's something all young guys strive to be. And it's part of the game sometimes. Yeah. And, you know, McMahon, every time there's a flaw, every time there's something that he needs to work on, you know, he goes back and he works on it, and it's only going to make him a better player. He's still improving. And he still has two more years with the Rockies, and it's going to be exciting with Mac and B-Rod.
Yeah, and through all of it, you know, he's still got a pretty solid shot to sitting in the 260s. But he's going to have a 270 season with 25 homers, you know, and obviously we're all hoping for maybe a little more out of there. But then you look back on it, and then the stupendous defense at two different positions, though it looks like he's pretty locked in at third now, as he well should be with Rodgers doing what he's doing. And you just go, you know what, plenty there to build on for McMahon. So totally agree on all that. Joe, obviously. Oh, you're going to stay on McMahon?
Well, I was going to throw a quick question out at you for something. Yeah, yeah. And maybe this is something we think about before, and maybe we talk about it on Monday's live podcast, August 2nd show, which you can follow live on YouTube on our channel. But going forward, because we talked a little bit about maybe making second half predictions and stuff, or seeing what happens after the trade deadline. If the Rockies have a player who gets an MVP vote, it's gonna be 10th, right? It's gonna be a 9th or 10th MVP vote. And you go, hey, so and so finished 23rd in MVP voting.
Yeah.
Who would you put that money on? Would you put it on Story? Would you put it on McMahon? I would put it on McMahon for the simple fact that still, even after what he's kind of gone through, I think for the simple fact of there could be this narrative of, hey, this is the guy who replaced Nolan Arenado. Let's look at his numbers. Again, he's got to get a little hot, right? He's got to have a much better final 2 months of the season. You go, I think it could be him. You know, we see what happened with Story. And even if he goes out and has a Story-esque second half, that might not be enough. Voters maybe already have their minds made up. They think what they think about Story. Yeah. But McMahon could go, and if some of it is recency bias, and you could maybe say, you know what, that Ryan McMahon had to fill some pretty big shoes. And you know what? Let's look at his numbers. It's pretty darn good.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's going to finish really strong. So I can see that as possible.
You think he might be? You think he might if he had to?
Yeah. I mean, I don't think any of them are. But yeah.
I don't think so either. But
I mean, but yeah, McMahon would probably be the guy. Because again, I think he's going to have a pretty big second half. As I've always said, he's streaky. He's slumpy, the ups and the downs. And I think we've probably seen the worst slump of the season. And I think we're in for one of those hot streaks before too long. So we'll see.
At the homestand coming up with the Cubs and the Marlins, or rather,
whoever's left
the Cubs and the Marlins at home. And we know in August, man, it gets hot, both temperature wise in the stadium on those plastic seats, and as well as in the air with those fly balls for sure.
Let it fly. Connor Joe homering in his hometown, getting his second ball.
Love that
season. You gotta love to see that. You love everything. Look, you love everything that Connor Joe does on a baseball field right now. Even if he strikes out with the bases loaded to end the game, and he could have been the hero, and it doesn't work out, you're just happy to see Connor Joe. But of course, when he does the big things, also his second biggest moment of the set was him being more excited for Herman Marquez hitting a home run than he was for himself hitting a home run.
He was the first one there in the dugout. Gotta love that.
See, even the comments section lights up for Connor Joe. It's
he does, man. And again, you really, you know, we Goody's our guy, you know, so we want you to go and listen to his podcast, but really do yourself a favor and listen to that Connor Joe interview. You're going to love him even more. And it's not like, you know, Joe is this personality where, he's so funny, he's so witty. Just a great story, a good guy. You just love to root for him, and you'll learn even more about what he's gone through and how the Rockies have been with him along for that ride. And as you said, right there in SoCal, where he's from, and it's just so, so wonderful. It's great to see him having the success finally, now that everything is, you know, finally starting to align for him. You hope it continues.
Right. It's just been so much fun. A few other final thoughts on the offense, and then we'll go through pitching real quick and wrap up with the deadline stuff. But
our king of the game.
We got to do king of the
game. You got to stick around for that one, because you are going to love it. Rockies lose. Starting pitching, not great. Relief pitching, they get one run. Who's going to be the king of the game? That's called a teaser.
However, in the games before, Elias Diaz with another couple of home runs on this road trip. As you can recall, when we were doing sort of second half predictions, you were big on Charlie Blackman having a big second half. He's been great. He is showing out well for you. Lots of hits on this road trip.
Back to hitting leadoff too.
Yeah, that was fun. That had to be
all
fun.
Right, man. Let's bring it back. This is almost like,
let's run it back.
31-26. It's like Ric Flair, you know, doing one last run for the comeback, and you're like, yeah, doing the flips, doing the whatever, taking it back. Like, absolutely. You love to see that. He got an RBI the other night too. Yeah. Just kind of doing, you know, leadoff guy stuff and being selfless, and you know, hey, why not? Like, that's a fun angle. Like, even if you just want to go to the ballpark and say, we might only stay for a couple innings, but Blackman's gonna lead off the game, and he might hit another leadoff home run, and that's what I paid my ticket to see. That's so much more fun than him batting third, fourth, or fifth. So you know what? Let's do it. Maybe, why not? Let's do it.
Start the game with singing.
Yeah, that too. That's it.
I mean, Ryan Maltoppi for leadoff. But still, no. I mean, 100%. As long as his toe is hurt, I'm with you. Let's run it back. It's so much fun watching Charlie bat leadoff. Like I said, he's been doing great. One of my big predictions was that the catching tandem was offensively going to be much, much better in the second half. Nunez has looked sharper for sure. Still not totally fixed, but he's had a couple of big hits. Obviously, Diaz was the one I was riding some momentum there, but you could just as easily have thought, hey, guy had a hot 2 weeks. He was terrible. Look, he was terrible. He was awful. For the first month and a half of this season, he might have been the worst qualified hitter in baseball. Like, he was providing no power. He was striking out a ton. He was hitting like a buck 30. Right?
Diaz, you mean. I thought you were talking about Nunez. I was like, no, wait, Nunez, are we? And then I realized.
On and then turned into one of the worst qualified. But,
yes, I missed that part. Yeah, right. Diaz, you're right. Yeah, they were exact opposites. They were exact opposites. And really, Diaz was pretty bad for 2 months.
For 2 months.
Maybe more than that. Yeah,
it was bad. So I was riding a hot couple of weeks, but there was plenty of reason to be like, he's going to go back to being the thing he was before, and he continues to look good. And again, on the road. When these guys do it on the road, your ears perk up a little extra, right, for the Rockies. When they go out there and they find their pop, and so – Elias Diaz is quickly becoming one of the players I am watching most closely down the stretch for the Rockies. We do this on a future podcast too. The five guys you're really, I mean, and not just like guys you we want to watch Brendan Rodgers hit a bunch of home runs, but I mean, scrutinizing, like really getting in there and picking apart his game and seeing like, are you a part of this future? Are you a thing here? Can we build around this? Can you be a real solid piece in this place, or are you just another catcher who's kind of fine at everything and have hot streaks and cold streaks like everybody else, and at the end of the season and just, you know, so I'm going to be watching him very closely.
We also saw him batting cleanup for games. And again, if you're following at @DNVR_Rockies or at Patrick D. Lyons or at Drew Kreisman, you're going to get all of this content. It was the first time since 2017 when Dustin Garneau batted cleanup. That was the last time.
Amazing.
It was a catcher, right? It's amazing. Insane. Went back. Willian Rosario did it 54 times, everyone's favorite. All others, 23 times. Yeah. That's it. So Willian Rosario more than doubles the field.
Yeah.
So you got him in first, Second, Ramona Hernandez, who was sneaky good. Oh, I was always a very big Ramona Hernandez. When they made that trade, I was very happy for the Rockies at the time.
He's a good player.
Yeah, and Charles Johnson and Garneau, they had three. Then you got what? Tied for fourth, Todd Green, Chris Iannetta. And the first, Jayhawk Owens. I had back-to-back days where I tweeted about Jayhawk Owens. I was very happy about that.
Jayhawk Owens can get into the conversation.
Random, totally random. There are two different things. One, the first one didn't have to do with catching. No. But there you go, Jayhawk Owens, the first one in 1993. It's a rarity. And again, for all teams, we know the Rockies have, oh man, they've had such bad catching. All right, go ahead and use a supplemental first rounder on Drew Romo. Honestly, go back and look at Marlins, D-backs, Rays. They've all had pretty poor catching. Yeah, Marlins had Charles Johnson, you know, more in his prime. But other than that, it really it's been super similar all across the board. Mike Zunino, was an all-star this year for the Rays. Okay, cool. But for the most part, they've all struggled. They've all struggled with catching.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's I predicted before the season that they would have catchers not bat eighth, which I thought was pretty bold because the catching has batted eighth for the Rockies for years and stuff.
You nailed that.
But I never would have predicted cleanup. So good on Elias for pulling that off in short.
And even with a more full-strength team, he was batting seventh, I think, on Saturday night. Totally. So, I mean, there you go. That's a huge jump, right, from eighth to seventh. Take it from a guy who, when we were talking with Goody,
eighth and seventh.
When we were talking with Goody this week, I forgot to relay this story once where I our coach was absent, and so we had the assistant coach who really believed in me, started me at varsity at shortstop and DH'd for me. Folks, that has never happened before. Me, yes, I was a shortstop, starting shortstop in high school, varsity, and I was DH'd for. Like, that's pathetic. Amazing. So that was where my offense was. So for me, if I was batting eighth or ninth, and the next day, you know, I had a good game, and I was batting seventh, I'm like, double cleanup tonight, guys? Yeah, let's do this. So that's a big deal for me to see Diaz batting seventh.
Totally. And last note on the offense. Another guy we talked about him in the last series wrap because he's hitting these home runs, and when he hits them, they do stay hit. And that's slamming Sam Hilliard. Got another one today. Obviously, might get lost a little bit in the shuffle in the blowout. But again, road homers, marine layer homers, California road homers, and really for Sam, like, productive offense of any kind. Like, he was really eating it at the beginning of the year, like we were just talking about with Elias Diaz, but to such an extent that he had to be sent down AAA, where he still wasn't putting up great numbers. And there was every reason to believe that in this emergency call-up to bridge the gap between whenever Jonathan Daza could come back, that Sam would go out there and hit 048 and strike out 40% of the time and kind of get embarrassed a little bit and get sent back to AAA. And you worry, you know, about whether or not that's it for him. Really, his last chance to get to the big leagues in a week. What a difference a week makes. Goes out there against some quality pitching, does some things, and has us going, okay, do we need to, again, reevaluate? So along with Diaz, he'll be one of the guys, whatever level he's playing at, I'll be checking in some Topes games and keeping a very close eye on Sam Hilliard, who I was right on that precipice of, like, love you, man. Great story. Phenomenal tool set. The speed and power and the whole thing. But you just go, maybe it's not going to work out. Well, he's shown me something in a week, and I go, all right, I'm not out. I'm not off yet. I'm not jumping off the train just yet.
Yeah, I really hope he can stick around. They could find a way to make room for him. Daza now, did get activated off the COVID IL. I don't want Ryan Maltapia to hit the IL. First off, because I don't want him to be hurt. But if they just say, look, hey man, just have a little break.
If it's injury and they decide take an extra 4 days for some rest, I'm fine putting Tap on you don't have to rush Tapia back, is what you're saying, right? You don't need to.
Need to rush him. I would like for him to, just return of his own volition, right? Rather than say, hey, you know what, let's manipulate the roster a little bit for the timing, which again, all teams do, and that's fine. I guess just for his growth, I wouldn't necessarily want that, but it could be, part of the greater good. We'll see, what this can do for Hilliard. His numbers right now across the season still don't look good, but a lot of that had to do with, you know, the opening of the season. Go back and look at his last seven games since he's been called up. I mean, even just the last seven games, batting .273, .333 on base percentage, but the .545 slugging percentage is where you go, okay,
yes,
I can definitely deal with that. And we know what kind of arm he's got out there, one of the best in the game, which, again, people might roll their eyes at that and hear that and go, well, come on, wait. This guy that's just buried in AAA has one of the best tools in the game. Yeah. I mean, you can't put a guy out in right field if he's going to strike out 45% of the time and you're just waiting for a ground ball to go to him. You're waiting for a runner to go from first to third.
Yeah.
There's no benefit of that. And there's plenty of guys that have one good tool, maybe even two good tools, because we know he's got the legs too.
Right.
He can do that. And you know he can hit for power when he does make that contact. So, you know, maybe this will be something that if he's not necessarily a part of the future, because I feel like we've seen this with a couple guys where Mike Tauchman didn't get that call up late in the year in 2018.
Right.
He was done the next year, right? Rocky's got something for him. You thought that might have been the case with Daza. He ends up coming back in the fold. So even if Hilliard's not a part of the Rockies' plans, maybe get creative and maybe you can make a trade in the offseason to somebody else that says, I think maybe we could figure out a way to work with this young man. And for that,
right,
here you go, Rockies. Now, you know, you got some more depth in your system, whatever it may be. So you hope there's a way that they can kind of figure out to maneuver all of those pieces here in the final 2 months.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be interesting to watch those guys and see, and watch the guys managing them, mostly Bud Black and the team there and how they do that. So we'll have our eyes on all of that. Hey, I'll tell you one thing I've had my eyes on recently, and that's telling everybody that I know who's looking for some work, and I know there's some people out there looking for some work. Pandemic did some things. Jobs have gotten a little bit fluid out there. Totally understand that. And there's no better place to work than at Vault. 100%. I can tell you from personal experience, people I've known, people in my family who've worked there for decades, not even just years, but decades. And you typically don't stay at a place that long if they're not treating you well, paying you well, and making it so that you're having a decent everyday experience in your life. You're miserable every day at a place like that. You're not going in there for that long. So they're absolutely fantastic. They treat people well. They've called it the culture of belonging, which I know sounds a little bit like a cult. Hey, DNVR's got a fun cult right here. We're the fun cult, right? But what it really actually means is that they've got a 100% score on the Corporate Equality Index from the Human Rights Campaign, which basically means that they treat everyone well. They give everybody opportunity. You're not going to get fired because of how you were born or because of what you believe or because of how you express yourself. That's what that means, basically.
Yeah. And that upward mobility element, I think, is great, too, because you get locked into a job and maybe you get a couple cent increase in your paycheck every year or whatever, but are you making more money? Are you getting raises? Are you being promoted? Are you given opportunities? Are you given professional development?
Right.
That's why you want to sign on at jobs.ball.com.
Right. Especially women engineers, some of which we know, some big friends, fans of the podcast, and we are friends and fans of theirs, the Society of Women Engineers. Big supporters both ways between Ball and them. They're looking right now for technical and mechanical skills, people with those skills, not just the skills floating out there in the universe. They have to be attached to a person. And if you've got some of those skills, you're interested in how to help create aluminum cans and bottles, doing some manufacturing down here at their Golden plant, learning how to do it, all kinds of jobs available. Text Golden to 77222. You'll get linked to open positions. You can also go directly to jobs.ball.com and search for Golden. That's jobs.ball.com and search for Golden, or simply text Golden to 77222. All right, Patrick, a couple quick thoughts on the pitching here. It ended up with a couple of bullpen games, actually, today. I don't know that it was actually planned to be that way, but it's what it turned into, with Gomber just not having it and them getting him out of there right away to just not have him eat it today. Then the other one. But besides that, John Gray going well in his outing with the mini home run derbies we talked about, only giving up two runs, 6.1 innings pitched. The two runs coming on a two-run jack from Drake Cronenworth, who was absolutely fantastic all series. for the Padres. But other than that, John Gray doesn't get dinged. And going out there in a tough situation, you know, pitching basically the night of the trade deadline when a lot of stuff was feeling weird. And, you know, we may have time to get into that today or on the next couple of shows or whatever with Trevor still being there but not being in the lineup and not being happy and all of that. John being happy to still be there, being the one guy on record is like, I'd really like to stay. And then he goes out there and it's this, you know, weird spot. He's still going to go and pitch against these Padres, sans Fernando Tatis, but still, and is very, very good and reminds you again. And then I'll just throw them all together. Give me your thoughts on it. We'll go through real quick. Obviously, Kyle Freeland, another really solid start. Two of them on this road trip. And Herman Marquez, we talked a little bit about that one, him hitting the home run and having a really good start. But those guys, you know, obviously Gomber didn't look good, but the dudes, the Rockies dudes, continue to show you, okay, yeah, this is it. This part of it is real. The rest of it, no, but this part of it does appear to be who we thought they were.
And they've been touch and go at times on the road too. It's, yeah, again, to reiterate for anyone maybe just tuning in, and if you are just tuning in, curious time to check in on the Rockies. Nevertheless, Rockies starting pitching has been really good at home and as consistent as it can be in that ballpark. And it's been on the road where, you know, maybe not as much. And that certainly would be an interesting conversation to have with a lot of them one-on-one, why they think that might be happening. And honestly, it's probably more just about being comfortable at Coors Field and being comfortable there and just not as much as on the road because you're not waking up in your own bed. And we know all of those things, but it is strange to have them be so good at home versus on the road. And here, you know, the series, again, outside of Chi-Chi, outside of Gomber today, you know, they've been pretty solid. They even had a bullpen day. Bullpen was really good. Antonio Santos has been a nice surprise, you know.
It was Tinoco. That was the most winnable game that they lost. And one guy gave up five runs and a guy who hasn't pitched for you all year. And he's depth in an already bad bullpen that was basically called up because of the one move you were actually able to pull off, which is moving Givens. And so you've got, it's like one guy blows that game for them. And it's not even a guy who's been a part of the team for the vast majority of the year. So yeah, you're right. I kind of glossed over the bullpenning game, but the rest of the pen was good. Santos was good. Ben Bowden was fantastic. Lucas Gilbreth was fine, a little shaky, but
strikeout. I like the strikeout. Yeah. Again, if you get an uptick on that, you can say, all right, that's fine. Again, right now for where he's at as a rookie, who's a starting pitcher and had never pitched above high A going into the season. Reminder, there was no minor leagues last year. Otherwise, you would have seen him at double A. Right. So, you know, again, these guys are making some growth, and I think that it's been positive, you know, for the most part. And maybe some of it has to do with expectations. You know, maybe it has something to do with, all right, well, we've been really bad, so let's not worry about that. Let's not look at our ERA. What are you working on today? What are you doing today? And again, at times it's okay. Santos not able to get out of that fifth inning, gives up two runs, but overall you go, looked a lot better than he did last year at times and looked a lot better than he has in Albuquerque this year. So you go, all right, taking positive steps.
Yeah. He's reminding me a little bit actually of a pitching version of Jonathan Daza, where when he first showed up in the big leagues, you're like, this guy doesn't belong here. He's never going to be a big leaguer. This guy can't play big league baseball. He looked awful. And then the second time he got called up, he looked, it's frustrating. This guy's kind of a stopgap. And then the third time he got called up, you know, say, okay, I see a little bit of the potential, but still even there, they go out and, you know, they don't even keep him as a part of not DFA. I guess they did DFA him, didn't they? Or was that non-tender or whatever. And they just brought him back on a minimum deal just because no one else was going to pick him up this offseason. Just, you know, you want to come to spring training, and now he's finally starting to show that some of his skill set can translate to the big leagues. So I'll be curious about Santos if he can maybe – some of these other guys, if they can maybe figure that stuff out. But Santos
– lost cup, maybe.
So, yeah.
So we're talking about these guys doing okay. Still doesn't answer the question, who's our draft king of the game? Right.
Of this game.
This game, this 8-1 loss on the road in San Diego. Who we got?
Couldn't go with the starting pitcher. Couldn't go. We could have maybe gone with Sam Hilliard. We had to go. Look, we had to go with you.
That's right.
And for enduring this team on the road. Now, the interesting thing about this one is this is actually your payoff. So this is why you're the draft king of the game today, because you've endured this team on the road all season. If you're listening to this now and you watched these games here in San Diego, you know, interested in the outcome of the games and all of that, then you have you then you are the kings of the game. 100% absolutely, because they came in to this road trip with 10 wins on the road. and got four.
is nearly a 50% increase. That's really good. And outside of, you know, for enduring the team on the road, Rockies fans, sometimes you have to endure the front office. Sometimes you have to endure transactions, lack of transactions, frustrations. The players have to deal with that too. And you know what? You guys still stick in there. And as frustrating as it may be at times, you're Rockies fans, and that's why we love you.
Right? Out there doing the thing, man. And especially the passion I saw a lot of people reaching out during that 9-4 win when they really were just teeing off. And you're going, what's going on? This is great. It was like the L.A. game that started it all. The first game of the road trip was just amazing. Absolutely amazing. It was really cool to see people responding and the people that have lived through it, like you said, have really, really been through it. So that's right. Crown yourselves kings and queens of the game if you prefer non-gender specific royal pronouns. But it was nice to see the guys play competitive base. And as we've talked about, you know, the young players coming through and doing some stuff. So, all right, last one of these for you. Illegal Pete's, fantastic stuff. You know all about Illegal Pete's if you've ever had, you know, a burrito. Or if you've never had a burrito bowl, our guy Spencer will tell you all about it, how to get it with the potatoes, the whole thing. If you're more standard, if you're a boring-ass person like me that just likes to eat standard little carne asada, a little carnitas burrito, whatever you prefer that particular day. Illegal Pete's got you covered. Absolutely fantastic stuff. They're all around. They got one out there in Lodo. They got one just a few blocks from the DMVR bar on Colfax. They hook you up with great deals, including if you show them a ticket to any event, game, show, whatever you've been out at. They'll hook you up with a free draft beer or house margarita with the purchase of an adult entree. They've got happy hour every day at all locations. From 3 to 6 p.m., dollar off all drafts, dollar off all house and coin style margs, $20 party margs, these big friggin' things. I mean, of course, it's for a whole party. Absolutely fantastic stuff. You know you love Illegal Pete's. I was just reminding you, it's time to go and get some Illegal Pete's.
And they got one up in Fort Collins that's pretty neat. It's got a rooftop area that you can sit out on a nice warm day. Ooh.
Yeah.
They're all over the Front Range.
I love them. It's
range.
Yeah, you gotta enjoy yourself some Illegal Pete's, especially if you're from Colorado. Actually, no, it's almost more like if you're new to Colorado, it's like one of those things that you have to adopt. Honestly, like you've gotta adopt Illegal Pete's if you're new to the area. That's how you can like trick locals into thinking that you're a local, right? Just suggest. So if you're listening to this and you're here from out of town and you wanna, you're like, you're down at the DNVR bar with some new friends you just made who are all locals, you want to impress them, be like, let's go to Illegal Pete's. That'll get it done for you. All right, Patrick, wrapping it up today. I guess we still got a little bit of time here, probably not a lot to hash all of it out. I either have very little or very many thoughts on the Rockies at the trade deadline. Honestly, I feel like I've shared most of them on the show already. We kind of hashed it out. But again, just putting a bow on it, obviously Trevor Story not traded, John Gray not traded, nobody else traded, Michael Gibbons only person traded. So although They did bring back Austin Godot. We said it. I was like, damn, if they could have given me that one more, I would have. We could have come back.
They and technically did the minor league thing, right?
They did that thing I'd been talking about, but they didn't hit me up with the other big league move. I still thought they'd move Kroner and maybe the injury there. I don't know. I'll try to find out more information on whether or not there was. It was obviously not the number one topic for Bill Schmidt in his press conference was not, hey, how come you didn't trade CJ Kroner?
So I did ask.
I was gonna say you actually did.
I asked about him.
You asked about Chassin, the other guys, which I appreciated.
Chris Owings. Because again, you're not gonna get back somebody huge, but you know, when you've got a farm system that has some flaws, maybe even you just get a guy that's having a decent year at AA and say, hey, you know, we got a hole in Hartford, so let's go ahead and do something. You know, again, doesn't move the needle that much, but I think the biggest problem with it is I don't think the Rockies are, you know, really engaging with other teams. I think the other teams, you know, maybe almost to a degree, lack certain patience with the Rockies. You saw it with the White Sox. I think a lot of that had to do with maybe the Rockies having, you know, a very high starting offer of saying, hey, we want Michael Kopech for Trevor Story, and that's fine, go for it. Yeah, I like that. I think that would have been a fantastic deal. But at a certain point, the White Sox say, look, it's not worth our time to continue to negotiate with you because you're not moving off of this. And so they moved on to Cesar Hernandez. And I think, you know, beyond that, you know, I'd heard some folks basically phrase it in the capacity that, you know, if you're working at the last minute, there are a couple trades that, hey, the trade deadline has passed. There's deals that are done. They just haven't been announced yet. If you're working right up to that deadline with the Rockies and you're putting a lot of time and you're investing a lot of time in these negotiations and you make that, you know, trade and you say, got it. So your guy's coming over to us. We're going to give you this. And then you're getting yourself all set for this new player to come to town. And then the phone rings again and you hear, hey, sorry, our owner turned that deal down. I think there that might have been a fear for a lot of teams is because the Rockies don't engage in trades. And so they don't go through that type of typical protocol. And I think that hurts on both sides is the negotiating and whatnot. And I think that's why you might not have seen a lot of teams really calling back on Trevor Story because it almost was a fruitless endeavor. You saw what the Cubs ended up giving up to the Mets, or rather the Mets giving up Pete Crow Armstrong. It's fantastic. They got that PCA for a package that, you know, frankly could have been a lot better if they had gotten Trevor Story and maybe even Michael Givens. I understand the John Gray thing, and we'll see what happens this offseason. I think it's kicking the can down the road just a little bit. But nevertheless, the Rockies could have gotten a really strong package from the Mets because, let's face it, Javier Baez is not as good as Trevor Story. And yet the Cubs were able to kind of make that deal. And
that's interesting.
It's frustrating.
Javier Baez put up a 3 WAR on Baseball Reference this year and Trevor Story a 1.5. So the 109 OPS plus Trevor Story at a 92. And Trevor Story's been hurt, so.
There have been those injury concerns, but I think since some point, actually, I think since last season, Javier Baez has like a .275 on base percentage. So that's not great. But I think the Mets, again, they needed to inject some kind of life. And you saw them, you know, working a little bit with Colorado. And again, I think Colorado, I think it's okay. Go out, make some mistakes, make those trades, not the financial trades like the Arenado deal was, but go out, make some trades. And yeah, they might not be great at first and you might be criticized by the fan base, this, that, and the other, but go through that, make some mistakes, build some relationships with teams so that you can maybe make some of those quick and easy deals. We saw that with the Yankees and Rockies for a little bit, a couple years ago, where they made 2 deals back and forth. We also, thank you, Raheem. Yes, we, at the beginning of the season, a lot of that, and whether you agree with it or not, one of the reasons why I said he would not get traded is because the Rockies' track record at the deadline, July 27th, 2012, was the last time they had made a move in a down season, in a losing year, outside of the Troy Tulowitzki season in 2015. And so I think just engaging in that and just kind of saying, look, we are concerned about how we are viewed in the industry. We know that I think they're more concerned about their fan base. And it sounds crazy to say that that's a bad thing. But I think because of how the industry views the Rockies, including, well, most importantly, the other 29 teams, that is what's hurting them more than anything. Jacob wants to know who won at the trade deadline.
Easy.
Any thoughts? Easy. Dodgers? Easy. I mean, they got the two best players, right?
There was a whole lot of noise, and I sincerely hope that everyone who bought at the trade deadline wins the World Series this year. The Dodgers, the National League West and the National League, and in my mind, the Major League Baseball season was won and lost in the hour when Max Scherzer was going to go to the Padres. And I said this on a recent show, that was going to totally flip me on the Padres, maybe make them my favorite to win the World Series. Obviously, I didn't know it was about Hamilton Tatis. Now, I mean, I was about to go full in on the Padres if they landed Max Scherzer.
Yeah.
He's very good.
it would have been the exact same thing of when the Astros got Justin Verlander.
Exactly.
And you go, yep, done.
That's
go
it.
Ahead, put him in.
And I did that then, actually. Yeah, I predicted that because it was like, yeah, duh, they're already, yeah, you add that, and there it is. And so when that didn't happen, and then the Dodgers picked up Scherzer and Trey Turner, I went, Dodgers just won the NL West, probably the National League and the World Series. They're the best team in baseball. That's what they, so if they don't win, it's because like in these other years where they haven't, something happens, they fall short, a hot Nationals team gets them. That can always happen in baseball. It can always happen. But the Dodgers, it sucks to hear. And lots of teams have lots of bold things that were fun and cool and interesting. And I get it. Like, but it's the Dodgers. So
no, you're right. You're 100% right. I think the next biggest like star package, okay, Rizzo, Gallo for the Yankees, but they needed some starting pitching and they didn't necessarily go out and get that. And, you know, getting rid of Luis Sessa and Justin Wilson was kind of, I wasn't exactly a big fan. I think the Brewers did okay with what they got. Like every team made a deal. It was a seller's market, right? So a lot of teams were really able to load up. Toronto did a good job getting Jose Berrios. I think one of the better trade deadlines was actually the Chicago Cubs. Now they had the trade capital that the Rockies didn't, right? They had four superstar players, whereas the Rockies probably had one and a half, right? To the Rockies, John Gray's a superstar, right? And you get that. Industry, maybe he's halfway there. So the Cubs had that much more to trade away. And then guys who are literal all-stars, if you want to put it like that and split hairs, right? Yeah. Four literal all-stars, whereas the Rockies had one all-star. And I'll give them a little credit there for John Gray being a really solid piece. And so it makes sense that they would have gone from, you know, a mid to low 20s farm system all the way into a top 10 farm system, which is what I've been seeing. Mainly the big deal being Nick Madrigal. They get a major league talent, a guy who was – maybe not destined for Rookie of the Year, but was in the conversation really before good. He I went like down it. For the White yeah. Sox. Yeah. That's huge. That was huge right there. So that's kind of the goal at the trade deadline is, all right, look, this season is lost. We're not going to do it, but how can we make a move that in 3, 4, 5 years, maybe even 6, 7 years, we look back and go, man, our team is really, really good. How did we get all of those players? Let's go back and review the 2021 trade deadline. And that's one of the reasons why the Rockies across the board, you know, were given an F or, you know, did one of the worst jobs because they've really just failed to do that and to understand that, look, you can improve your club years and years and years ahead. And they didn't exactly do that. I mean, they will with the compensation pick, right? Like, okay, they'll get better. But even if they get a college kid, that's still going to be 4 or 5 years until they really start to contribute to the team. So kind of the message I think that the Rockies sent it inadvertently is, yeah, it's going to be 5 years until, you know, we have the core. And maybe the core's here and maybe the core surprises and does that. But the Rockies themselves, high school the last 2 years, going ahead and preferring the compensation pick rather than a guy who's already in a system at low A, high A, whatever it is, They prefer something younger, something that will take longer to develop. That's part of what they're communicating here with what they did at the deadline. Story, where do you think he goes?
Jacob wants to know what's the perfect team for Story to go to. If he just has his.
And we're over time, but our guy Jacob, man, super chats.
Super chat.
We got to talk about it.
Yeah. Super chat. We will not wrap up the show if you're super chatting. I shouldn't tell him that.
Oh, no. I know, it's Sunday night. Come on. No, that's true, though. We'll be fair if you super chat it.
Yeah. I think that's one of the interesting things actually about this particular market and everything that was going on right here now is I'm not sure that there is a perfect fit for Trevor's Story. One of the things that's why we kept hearing this stuff about how, if the White Sox did acquire him, they were going to move him to second base, or even the wackiest one, obviously, with the Giants potentially moving him to center field. But we were hearing a lot of that kind of stuff. Like if the Yankees were going to move him, they were going to have to move people around. Maybe he plays third base for them, all this other kind of stuff. And so I don't know that right in this moment, there is a perfect fit for him. He's going to have an interesting choice in front of him once he does become a free agent, which will almost certainly happen. And, but it's kind of funny, like you would have asked, it comes in with ready to pull an all-nighter, boys. You're the best, Jacob. Seriously, we really appreciate you, man. But, you might have said, hey, Nolan Arenado is a perfect fit on this Cardinals team right now. They're going places. They're the Cardinals. They're always going to do things. They can use that one more star hitter. Got this young pitching coming up. And that's what I thought. I thought the Cardinals are going to win. The NL Central is a pretty safe bet. They do it all the time. You would have thought they would have bought big at the trade deadline. They, along with the Rockies, are some of the consensus big losers at this trade deadline for basically hanging around 500. And you're the Cardinals. Like, surely you can. And if not, then go the other way and start moving. And they also just brought in a couple of veterans they didn't move the needle really at all. And there's
Ahab, yeah.
And the talk really ratcheted up about Nolan Arenado taking that opt out at the end of the year, because I'm sure when he went there this year, he had World Series in his mind with these Cardinals. You look at him right now and you go, but the talent in the National League, with how good the rest of the National League is, Cardinals aren't going to, you never know with that team, but
100% he does not opt out this offseason. Mark it down. Now, remember,
I've always been against the opt out. I've always
said he has an opt out after 2022. So,
Again,
what the CBA is, right? That's the better.
You don't walk away from that.
But you go, hey, where does Story go? And Drew, you said you don't know. I agree. We don't know. I don't think we know. I don't think we've seen what teams are going to do in the offseason. Trevor Story, he may, if he has a down year, he might just sign with somebody. Do what Marcus Semien did. Said, hey, totally. I'll sign a one-year deal. I'll go play with Toronto. I'll play second base. Yep. Maybe Story tries center field. I don't think that'll be the case. But teams can go ahead and make moves. The Angels, they're going to need a shortstop after this year. I think Iglesias is a free agent after the season. So, Nationals, they need a shortstop now after dealing away Trey Turner's going forward. So we really don't know. And Jacob said, or our boy Raheem said, Rangers? And you go, why would he jump from one team that's under 500 to another?
Yeah.
I think there are different situations. We could talk about that another day. But that's not crazy. Obviously, it's a fit with him being from Texas.
Yeah, I think those are all, we'll keep our close eye.
And Drew, now's a great time to end the podcast.
I know.
Except Jacob has got another super chat here.
Love it.
We already touched on our wrestling thing. Favorite wrestler of all time. Also, Jacob, you got to go back and check out. We did one with our guy.
Oh, Cormac Battle.
You're talking Cormac about Battle. Why did I draw a blank? I'm thinking of his Twitter handle.
Yeah.
Our guy Cormac Battle is an all wrestling show. I dressed up like Hulk Hogan, mustache and all.
Yeah, full on.
And so we did that. We've drafted wrestling teams and stuff like that. For me, Macho Man, Randy Savage, also played baseball. Gotta love that with the Cincinnati Reds minor leaguer.
Yeah.
So Randy Macho Man is my favorite wrestler of all time. You like AJ Styles? Yeah, can't go wrong with that.
Yeah, AJ Styles, fantastic.
And Drew, gobbledygooker, right?
The gobbledygooker, that's correct. Yeah. Nailed it in one.
Boink. No, Doink.
Kane was the one that got me into wrestling, yeah, basically, when I was, you know, a kid in the 90s and I had seen it on TV, and there was always that age old question of, isn't it fake? Is it whatever? And I still didn't know, like, was it purporting to pretend to be real, which made the whole thing much hokier to me. And then I saw this dude walk out in a mask and he was shooting fireballs. And I was like, oh, they're obviously not pretending. This is real. This is like the comic books that I grew up reading, yeah, right? When I saw Kane and the mask and the superpowers and the whole thing, I was like, this is like a live action. And it is. Actually, that's still one of my favorite ways to describe professional wrestling. It's a live action, one take comic book with stuntmen and actors, stuntmen slash actors, right? That's what they do. So yeah, Kane.
Who's your number two?
Kane Mysterio Jr.
I was going to say, you've mentioned, I didn't know the answer to that. I'm trying to remember. I'm like, shoot, who's your guy? But you, yes, you definitely have said Kane a lot.
Yeah.
But Mysterio, okay, I haven't heard you talk too much about him.
Yeah, I mean,
maybe a little bit.
Big Luch guy in general. And that one may even be more of a recent thing, because I've always loved Rey Mysterio Jr.
Appreciate the career, right?
You appreciate the career. And then it really helped relaunch, because going to a local show that was billed on Rey Mysterio, and my now fiance Caitlin, you know, took me to this show. She wanted to see what it was all about. We might have been the only two people in the building who did not speak a word of Spanish. At Chavo Guerrero was there, Carlito was there, and then obviously Rey Mysterio Jr. was the big, and the whole thing was like this big celebration of Eddie Guerrero too. Decade after he passed. And it was just a wonderful night of music and colors and dancing and wrestling and the whole thing. And that's when Katie really fell in love with taking pictures. That was her first time taking pictures at one of those shows. Then she wanted to start going back to local shows, and that basically ignited our entire, and now she's basically the official photographer of 3/4 of the main
of Denver
world, of Denver
of yeah. Denver wrestling
of Denver wrestling
basic.
And I get to go to all those shows, and that's how I met Cormac. And now he writes at Purple Row, which is this great small world, you know, situation. And, but yeah, so that Rey Mysterio helped totally reignite like a real love on a visceral and local level for the art form. And I called it that. Those are my guys.
Those are some good ones. Those are definitely some good ones. Yeah. Thanks for asking.
Your number two. I knew you're macho, man. So do you have a number two? Do you have a modern guy? Samoa Joe's awesome. CM Punk. Yep. These guys are great.
No, I think when we drafted our, like, our team, I drafted Jericho, CM Punk, which was a late addition, and Hogan, I think.
Yeah.
So, Jericho, I mean,
all timer. Yeah.
Kind of. Yeah. I mean, I guess Hogan, I mean, not that I'm, you know, I'd still mark out for him. Are you kidding me? So, yeah. I mean, it would probably be Hogan, but not like I root for him actively, you know? Yeah. Nice try, Raheem.
Right? I so appreciate the attempt.
I do.
That's fantastic. All right, Jacob, we really do appreciate you. Thanks for the super chats. Remember, anyone, you can force us to talk about basically whatever you want if you throw a little bit of super chat our way on the YouTube. Otherwise, you can always just join the chat here on YouTube. Make sure you're subscribing. Todd, of course, Undertaker. Would be weird to have this conversation, not even say the name, the all-timer. Get here, click the bell icon. You can talk to us about baseball or pro wrestling or whatever it is we're doing by the end of the show. Having fun, help direct the conversation when you're here live with us on the YouTube. Of course, you know to subscribe to the dnvr.com for all the written content, all that stuff, the discounts, hang out with us in the Discord channel, getting the free shirts, the bigger beer at the bar, all that kind of cool stuff. And you know to follow everyone on social media at Drew Kreisman, at Patrick D. Lyons, at @DNVR_Rockies. Thank you all for continuing to be absolutely awesome baseball fans out there. We promise to continue being absolutely Patrick Lyons, Andrew Kreisman in here. And until next time, we will see you at the ballpark.